In episode 44 of the Angry Clean Energy Guy, the one just before this one, I bashed banks and I promised that I would come back to bash insurance companies, accountants, lawyers, and rating agencies. So today I'm going to focus on bashing insurance companies in terms of the incredibly little that they're doing to fight climate change. But first, let me give you some context for where this bashing is coming from. Every time an engine fueled by oil, by gas, or by coal runs, we emit CO2. And that greenhouse gas, CO2, has to go somewhere. It does not miraculously disappear. And it's accounted for either because it stays in the atmosphere or because it goes into our oceans just to be released later into our atmosphere. In our atmosphere, CO2, alongside other global warming gases that we send a lot alongside it, like methane, for example, from oil and gas and from agriculture. So these greenhouse gases prevent Earth's natural cooling cycle from working because they trap the heat near the surface of Earth. And in turn, this then causes global temperatures to rise with devastating effects. Now, our CO2 and other greenhouse gases wild party has already led to a rise in global temperatures of at least 1 degree centigrade. We're 100% locked in for 1.5 degree centigrade rise, and worse is probably also pretty much guaranteed. Now, how do we know this? We know this because when we talk about carbon dioxide, we talk about it in parts per million. This number, parts per million, tells us how many parts of carbon dioxide there are in 1 million parts of air. So if we say that carbon dioxide is at 400 parts per million, for example, which is abbreviated to ppm, that then means that in 1 million particles of air, there are 400 particles of carbon dioxide. So let's focus on this parts per million concept for carbon dioxide for a second. It took us 5,000 years to increase the carbon dioxide parts per million from 270 to 280. So over 5,000 years, nothing happened. Then in just 100 years, we moved that parts per million from 280 to 290 ppm. And then it gets worse. We moved carbon dioxide from 290 parts per million to 300 parts per million in just 40 years. So that's 300 parts per million. But the rate kept accelerating as we kept pumping CO2 into the atmosphere, and it took just 4 years to move from 400 parts per million to 410 parts per million. So we've moved that CO2 concentration from a historically stable number of about 270 to over 410 today, and we've accelerated that rate of change in ways that are unpredictable. What we do know, however, is that that will kill millions and it will cost trillions in climate adaptation. The scientific consensus is that the planet is healthy for humanity at a level of 350 parts per million. That's 350. But right now, we're at 414 parts per million, and that's up 3 parts per million from exactly a year ago. And remember, we've just been through a global pandemic, and we have slowed actually the rise in emissions, but it was nowhere near good enough. So we've taken CO2 concentration from 270 parts per million to 414 parts per million, And today, it's the first time in human history that our planet's atmosphere has been at that level. And that's not just in recorded history, not just since the invention of agriculture 10,000 years ago. This is since before modern humans existed millions of years ago. In other words, humans and our ancestors have never known a world like this. Because the last time Earth's atmosphere contained this much CO2 was more than 3 million years ago. And at that time, global sea levels were several meters higher and Antarctica was partly blanketed in forests, if you can believe that. And right now, today, we continue to move fast to 450 parts per million. Because the math is simple. We add 3 parts per million each year. So to go from 414, which is where we are now, to 450, it will take us 12 years. And at that point, when we hit 450, which we will have a 50% chance of stabilizing average global temperature at 2 degrees over the pre-industrial period. And let me put this for you in perspective. In a world which is 2 degrees Celsius warmer, we're going to have 25% more hot days, 25% more heat waves, we're going to have more wildfires, we're going to have 40% of the global population exposed to at least one severe heat wave every 5 years, we're going to have more droughts, and we're going to have worse floods and extreme weather like cyclones and typhoons. And you can forget about it if temperatures rise to 3 or 4 degrees, because then we would enter a hot house Earth stage that would basically make many parts of the planet uninhabitable. So I hope what you're taking away is that even though we've been talking about climate change for 40 years, in effect, our global collective action to date has resulted in less than nothing. In other words, we did not decrease emissions and we did not even slow their rise. And with that, let's get back to the insurance industry and let's climate shame our friends in the insurance sector because of the so incredibly little that they're doing to contribute to fighting climate change. Welcome to episode 45 of the Angry Clean Energy Guy with me, Asad Razouk. I am so happy you're here and a happy new year to all of you, which I very much hope will be soon COVID-free for the entire world. I don't even know where to start with the insurance industry. First, let's acknowledge that while banks make a lot more noise, insurance companies who are just as omnipresent are much more quiet and therefore we often forget about them. But they are everywhere. They're companies that generally offer risk management to the rest of us. And there are many types of insurance companies. You've got accident and health companies, which are probably those that we all know best. These are the people who sell us our health insurance, for example. Then you've got life insurance companies that pay a death benefit as a lump sum when their beneficiaries die. Then you've got property and casualty companies that insure against accidents of non-physical harm. There's insurance companies that then offer very specific policies, for example, kidnapping and ransom, or medical malpractice, or professional liability insurance. Then you've got reinsurers, which is insurance that insurance companies buy to protect themselves from excessive losses. And by and large, we all pay insurance companies pretty much automatically each month for all sorts of things. And then never really think about them unless we want to get a payout from our health or house insurance policy, at which point we generally discover how difficult it is to get any money out of them. And as a result of the fact that we keep paying them, with them always very reluctantly paying anything back, but most of us really forced to insure this, that, or the other, the insurance sector accumulated something like $30 trillion in assets under management. $30 trillion. That's money that they then invest. And they invested either directly or through funds or through asset managers or through banks. So not only is it a huge sector with an enormous amount of financial power, but it's also a sector easily forgotten because it makes a lot less noise than banks, and because we really think about them mostly in a passive way. I don't go to my insurance company weekly to withdraw cash, nor do I use my insurance company debit card or credit card, and I think of them generally as painful to get any money out of anyway. And so they're there with all that money under management and with almost all of it invested in direct contravention to the Paris Climate Agreement. In other words, almost everything insurance companies do has nothing to do with fighting climate change. And worse, nobody really knows about it or focuses on it too much. Remember, to fight climate change, we cannot have any new oil, gas, or coal. None. And of course, you cannot really have a new oil project or a new gas project or a new ship that is carrying gas or a new coal plant without a slew of associated insurance policies, which insurance companies are by and large absolutely delighted to write. Even reports analyzing the insurance industry's performance on climate change are few and far between. A recent one called Insuring Our Future that's developed a scorecard on insurance and climate change and published by a broad collection of NGOs catalogs the industry's failure to really do much at all. That particular report focuses on 30 leading insurers and tries to assess their policies on coal, on oil, and on gas. So the NGOs wrote to the 30 insurers asking them questions, and of course they were completely ignored by 10 of the 30 companies. 20 responded in some fashion. And let's start by being generous. So if you want to be generous, you would generally say that European insurance companies are doing something. US and Chinese and Japanese companies are doing nothing. So that's a super high level conclusion. But then if you look in detail, what you see is that even the progressive insurers, so even the insurers that are supposedly progressive on climate change, are really just focused on coal and the dirtiest types of oil and gas, for example, tar sands projects or Arctic drilling. And I'll give you some examples. AXA, Swiss Re, Zurich, and Allianz are supposed to be leaders in terms of the insurance industry's effort to fight climate change. But even these guys really just cover tar sands and coal. In other words, they're quite happy to insure right now, today, new oil and gas projects, and even in some cases, new coal projects, but have some controls on only the absolute worst kind of new oil, gas, and coal projects. By contrast, companies like AIG, Berkshire Hathaway, Travelers are very happy to underwrite right now coal, oil, and gas without any restrictions. And so the general rule is there are some restrictions from some companies on new coal. There are almost no restrictions on oil and gas, with the exception of some limited restrictions on tar sands and Arctic drilling. There's only one company, an Australian insurer called Suncorp, that's actually ended cover for all new oil and gas production. And so the insurance industry is missing in action when it comes to ending coverage for new oil and gas projects. In other words, the insurance company is doing nothing in terms of helping achieve the goals of the Paris Climate Agreement. What these companies must do is they must stop completely insuring any new coal projects, any new coal companies, any new oil expansion, any new gas expansion. And then they should build from there. Because, of course, they should generally phase out insurance for oil and gas companies in line with the Paris Climate Agreement. So after 2030 or 2035, you should not be able to insure any coal, oil, or gas project, as in whatsoever, in any country, for any reason. And frankly, this is quite appalling, because the insurance industry is supposed to be a risk management industry. They're supposed to keep us safe. That is the absolute last thing that they're doing in terms of climate change. Not only are they fueling more climate change by insuring new oil, new gas, and new coal, but they themselves are also exposed to investing in all these bad sectors. And because their assets under management represent such a huge number, that's $30 trillion, their exposure is a problem for the entire financial system. Now let's go to some of the good news. Coal mining and coal power companies around the world are finding it more difficult to get insurance with European and Australian companies. US insurers, however, are still insuring coal as if we were in the 1950s. But we are beginning to see some change even in the United States, because even those insurers still continuing to cover coal, they are becoming more cautious. Why are they becoming more cautious? Because they woke up and smelled the coffee. Coal companies and coal power plants are closing. And even sleepy insurance companies have finally noticed. And speaking of sleepy, the sleepiest of all are the Japanese. Japan's major insurers, Sompo, Tokio Marine, and MSAD have all announced policies with large loopholes. And by and large, their policies are completely inconsistent with the long-term goals of the Paris Agreement. I'm less worried about the Chinese because as China moves decisively to implement its net zero by 2060 target, its insurance companies will fall in line. Then when you look at oil and gas, what you see is that insurance for that sector is highly concentrated. There's only 10 companies that cover 70% of the market. And the biggest are AIG, Travelers, Zurich, and Lloyd's. And these guys are all sleeping at the wheel. If you actually look at the insurance market for oil and gas, you would think you are in the 1980s. Just 9 insurance companies have tar sands limitations in terms of what they will insure, and 1 has oil and gas limitations. Everybody else is very happy to insure any new oil and gas, and that means out of the top 30 companies in the world, 29 would do pretty much anything still today, except for tar sands, which 20 are still very happy to do. And this is frankly a scandal. There's a proposed coal mine in Australia called the Carmichael coal mine. That one would produce 4.6 billion tons of CO2 over its lifetime. Now, 27 companies, insurance companies, have pledged not to insure the project, but that's not enough. There are a lot more insurance companies than the top 30 in the world. And basically, if that project is not insured, it does not happen. And there's a global leader in insurance broking and risk called Marsh, which is shamelessly still running around trying to find that project insurance. But the best way to fight that project is probably to stop it being insured, because there you don't have to focus on any government action, nor do you have to focus on any citizen action. You can just focus on the insurance companies that are trying to insure it and shame them into not extending cover. There's another project where probably the same approach should be taken, and that's the Canadian government's Trans Mountain Pipeline, which is a pipeline basically intended to ensure that Canada can pump more tar sands oil, which is the dirtiest form of oil possible, and then ship it. And that's all new oil, which we cannot have. And so far, 150,000 people have signed a petition calling on Lloyd's of London, AIG, Liberty Mutual, Chubb, W.R. Berkeley, Star, and Stewart to end their support for this project, but still, some of them are hanging on. Now, I don't know how these companies signed up to the project to start with, but it's good that Zurich, Talanx, and Munich Re aren't proceeding. But that's not enough. That's just three. There are many more that are willing to basically write any business without thinking about either their own exposure, because it's bad business, or the climate change impact, because the projects are completely not in line with the Paris Climate Agreement. And the irony is that these insurance companies are users of actuarial science. They're supposed to be proponents of scientific rigor. They're supposed to be kings of risk management. And what do? They basically forget to price climate risk into their policies to the oil, gas, and coal sector. And that's completely crazy, but it goes to show you, in quite stark terms, the incompetence clearly rampant in that sector. Because if they were competent, they would see by now that climate change was a risk, wouldn't they? So in case they haven't, let's remind them. Dear insurance companies, coal is uninsurable. Therefore, none of you should be insuring certainly any new coal mines or coal power plants. And you should all be looking at your existing coal sector policies, and I would guess significantly increasing the premiums and making, therefore, these projects even less economic than they already are. And then the other thing, dear insurance companies, that you should be doing is you should be revisiting your projections for oil and gas, especially new oil and gas, but not just that. And similarly, I am guessing your premiums should significantly go up because you are not taking into account climate risk into your projections, and you are therefore exposing yourselves to financial losses as well as badly pricing your insurance policies. And if you did the correct math, what would happen is that the cost of capital of these projects would go up, some of them would become uninsurable, and many would either stop or be phased out. And then the other thing all of you could do is think as you wield your shareholder vote on that $30 trillion that you're investing around. Do not vote against climate change resolutions, for example. Do not provide money to anti-climate science lobbies and politicians. Do not support lobbying to thwart climate action. So in short, insurance companies, you can do so much better, and you must. I want to close by talking about Lloyd's of London. Lloyd's of London, which is the world's biggest insurance market, made headlines in December by announcing that it's going to end new investments in coal, oil sands, and Arctic energy by 2022. And apparently, the Lloyd's Corporation and its members would phase out existing investment in companies which derive 30% or more of their revenues from coal, oil sands, and Arctic energy by the end of 2025. And finally, Lloyd's said that it was asking its members to phase out the renewal of existing cover to coal, oil sands, and Arctic by January 1st, 2030. And that announcement by Lloyd's is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Notice that they've completely ignored the Paris Climate Agreement. They will continue to insure new oil and new gas. They've only stopped, or they will only be stopping, insuring oil sands and Arctic energy. But everything else seems to be just fine to them. And as far as their existing policies for coal, Arctic, and oil sands, these are just fine till 2030. But as you heard at the beginning of this podcast, by 2030, we're going to be at 450 parts per million. And that means that we're going to have 2 degrees pretty much locked in. And that means that Lloyd's of London is setting up its own insurance companies to realize enormous losses that will wreck the insurance sector by then. I don't understand the logic any of these people are using, and I do not understand their math either. And I'm not even done yet. In episode 46 coming up in the next few days, you'll hear why accountants, lawyers, and rating agencies aren't doing much better. Thank you so much for listening to this episode 45 of The Angry Clean Energy Guy with me, Asad Razouk, and have a great couple of weeks.